It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland hanging along as well with Daniel Pryor today. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Mark.
Life coach and counselor. You talk to so many people. You do, do a lot with people in their marriages. And I actually was asking about this subject because it seems like it comes up a lot. And you've put together a show this week dealing with why the honeymoon ends. Why we are so infatuated before marriage and just can't wait. And then once we are married and have consummated, the sexual level or dimension of our lives seems to kind of fall off. What's going on? This
is such a huge topic. And so for the listeners,
that's why people a lot of times don't want to get married. They say they just want to live together.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, that's a bit deceptive. You know, once they're in a relationship like that, I think we tend to kind of, you know, hope for the best and put a smiley face on it. But I don't think there's any couple that's been together for a period of time to where the sexual activity is as invigorating or stimulating as it was in the beginning, unless they're doing something to continually increase the stimulation. And that's kind of what I call the slippery slope of sexual satisfaction. It's kind of a tongue twister. But what we've done here is to try to, for the listening audience and for ourselves, for our understanding, is to try to present a show here where we're presenting a little bit of what happens neurologically and then what happens psychologically. Because, you know, in the real world, we deal with the psychology of love and, I say the psychology. We deal with the narrative, the mental narrative, our story about love, our story about romance, our story about the sexual act. There's a neurology that goes on behind that, or, you know, these things are hand in hand. They're part and parcel. And so what we try to do is we've tried to build a show here where we're presenting these things in balance, but it's huge. And so just kind of hang on with us and we're going to make an attempt at it. But it is, you could write several books on this. And, you know, if you go on the internet and just start Googling some of these terms, you find out the massive amount of material out there on this. So it's huge. But we're going to try to just present it in just kind of like the words that I'm best at, which I call layman's terms. Those are the ones that I understand the best. So, yeah, there's a brain part, there's a mind part. And so we're going to try to do a little bit
of both here. Brain part, then. Let's start with that. You say sex is primarily about survival.
Yeah, all of our behaviors are at some point primarily about survival. That's very low in our brain. High priority. But it's further down in the brain. And so all of our behaviors, are about survival. They all at some point tap into our some of these automatic systems within our bodies, like heart rate, breathing, those kinds of things. So adrenaline is involved. So let's say adrenaline, those adrenal glands are very active. Even the pleasure of sex is a neurologically associated with survival. Let me just touch on that just quickly. The thing that's pleasurable about any behavior, if it becomes a pleasurable behavior, is the amount of dopamine that the brain associates with that particular behavior. And, of course, sexual activity is one that the brain associates a lot of issues, releases a lot of dopamine into the pleasure center in different areas of the brain when it's involved with that. So the brain actually says, well, that's a pretty good payoff for that particular behavior. And the brain prefers then that behavior over many other behaviors, even behaviors that are necessary, behaviors are necessary for society, necessary for health, et cetera, et cetera. It would prefer the behavior that releases a great amount of dopamine. So it's because it becomes a survival behavior to the brain. let's talk about the, there's a so I don't want to go too deeply into this. We could go into the kind of the bioneurological or the, you know, the physics of it, but we, you know, I wouldn't understand it and it wouldn't be meaningful to most of the people that are listening. So we'll kind of go across the tops of the hills here and let the rest of it go. So there's a lot of hormones involved in that. You know, there's adrenaline, there's dopamine, serotonin, and then there's this one that's kind of interesting that we've maybe touched on in a different show is this oxytocin, which there's actually been a research that they've had where couples who are living together or just in a premarital romantic relationship have less oxytocin in their system than couples who are married.
Hmm.
There's something about commitment that's associated
with... marriage commitment versus just living together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's associated with oxytocin. Oxytocin is, I call it the hormone with the memory. It's the hormone that you want in your system for to have, you know, things of regularity, things of security, things of safety, things of things that you can trust is actually associated with oxytocin. Mm-hmm. Whereas dopamine is just associated with, you know, a good time and, you know, kind of that rush. So high dopamine levels in this activity and low oxytocin levels. And what we want to do is, you know, what our brain wants to do, we want our brain to do is we want to go in the direction where it's more stable than just jumping from one high to another. So the sex drive begins purely biochemically, but along the way, it has to acquire a narrative, and that has to do more with the oxytocin, or could have to do more with the oxytocin if the narrative, the story we put with sex, that is the meaning we give to it. So it could be something that is just I just associate it with a fun time, and I'd rather do that than work on the books or, you know, build a house or whatever.
Build a life together.
You know, build a life together. Mm. Build commitment together. Mm-hmm. But I can actually create a narrative, a story about sex where it plays a lesser role, and I can actually teach my brain that these maybe more overwhelmingly stimulating activities like building trust, learning to forgive, learning to care about actually are good things. And then my brain will actually release some dopamine when I'm involved in those. And that's what we want to train our brain to do is to continue to release dopamine in those areas, which means that, I do not want to go down a road where I'm building the sexual part of our relationship up as, it's always got to be highly stimulating. So that of course is going to have some, going to affect the outcome and the place that we give, sex in the marriage. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, getting back to biblical standards, the Bible seems to encourage sex for marriage, save mm-hmm. sex for marriage. If at all possible, stay a virgin until you get married. Have very mm-hmm. little sexual activity before marriage. Mm-hmm. Do studies show that people who really follow that have a happier sex life then ultimately in marriage? Or?
Well, it certainly do because it has to do with trust. You know, and again, if trust is if we continue for this first segment of the show to kind of bring in the neurological part that trust is associated with this oxytocin, and oxytocin and dopamine, they're sort of like almost like spatial counterparts. You know, the more oxytocin you have, the kind of the less dopamine you're going to have, less dopamine, and you're certainly not going to have these surges. So what happens is, as we said before, if initially this the sex drive is a survival behavior and it's all biochemical. I mean, we think it's mental. We think we're falling in love, but actually what's happening is the body, the brain, is actually geared toward procreation for survival. Now, even animals that don't experience the pleasure of sex, they don't have that high dopamine rush like humans do, they still procreate. They still breed regularly. Because the brain is wired to where that behavior is a survival behavior. It has to do with the survival of the species. And humans are like that too. So when, you know, when Tarzan first meets Jane, it's not about, he quickly puts a narrative together, but actually what's driving it is just pure, neurological. So it's for the brain, it's a survival behavior. Now, when he involves himself in that, and they involve themselves, there's a dopamine rush. Well, then the oxytocin cuts in and kind of remembers that, associates it with that, you know, that good pleasure. I call oxytocin the hormone of the memory. So so it remembers that. Well, there's a huge dopamine associated with that, and that's good in the early part of life because that's when you're most the highest percentage of procreating. So the body
just physically,
kind of works
yeah,
that
you're
way.
Ready to have yeah. children. Yeah.
But at some point, you know, the relationship must become about something else. The problem with premarital sex is that the sex then can become even more of a survival, but not just simply because the brain interprets it as a survival behavior, but because I've now built a narrative that says I'm supposed to have that, I have to have that. And it takes the place of other things that I should be doing. And in relationship, it can take the place of commitment, take the place of trust building. You know, it's said that people are least loving when making love. I suppose that a biochemical way of stating that is that there's less oxytocin in the system when there's more dopamine.
Hmm, interesting. Yeah, it's a interesting subject. The reason this came up for me anyway, I was telling Daniel, I heard a pastor saying, why is it that before marriage, the devil is trying to get you to have sex and you're really pushing the pressure on, you know, just get in there and have sex before marriage. And then once you get married, then the devil seems to be trying to get you to not have sex and to have the distance. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of an interesting way of saying, but that does seem to be the case. When you're leading up to marriage, you just can't wait to be sexual. And then once you get married, now it seems to be harder and harder and harder to stay sexually involved.
Well, you could say that without the marriage institution, human beings would, you know, the sex drive would continually be just biochemical. Mm. And it wouldn't have a narrative having to do with care and trust and those kinds of things. That's marriage has brought that in. So God's intent for man and woman to live in that relationship of commitment is doing something spiritual to us. And it's in a way, you know, scriptures that say, you know, taking every thought captive, you know, to, you know, putting it under the blood, putting it under Christ. This is, in a sense, what we're doing. We're becoming more spiritual and less carnal. In a sense, what's happening neurologically is that we're teaching the brain you know, conditioning the brain to have kind of like a base of oxytocin, which is again associated with trust and things like commitment, other things too.
And teaching us to kind of grow up, like you say, mm-hmm. become more spiritual, become mm-hmm. more sanctified, become more Christ-like. Those are bigger issues that sometimes people shy away. Mm-hmm. They just want to go back and...
Yeah, so I think it's good to realize that when people look at the sexual behavior, sexual intimacy, and they say, well, you know, it's just something that we can do or not, that there's something going on in the brain, too, and that's where the danger is. You know, mm-hmm. those things can easily become an addiction. And here's the thing is that when they become an addiction, you're less likely to put your attention on things in the relationship that are more long-term, trust, forgiveness, those kinds of things. I've often found that when just because people are having great sex in their marriage is not necessarily a good thing. In fact, a lot of times it indicates that there are other areas in the marriage that they're neglecting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting subject today on Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor, how and why the honeymoon ends. We'll talk more about this after the break. If people are having problems in their marriage, they'd like to talk to you about it, both as maybe a couples counseling or individually. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
The website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. I can be emailed through there. The phone number is 425-778-6169.
BibleBasedCounselor.com. Also, previous broadcasts are available there of the Sound Mind Show. We'll be back with more of Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland as well, and this week the subject of how and why the honeymoon ends. And in our second part of our broadcast today, going to see if Daniel can give us some tips on making that, bringing that honeymoon back a little bit, or maybe putting in its proper context.
We'll
and giving
try.
Us some ideas on how to keep the love life going after you get married. And that does seem to be the case. People can't wait to have sex when they get just before they get married, and then after they get married, it seems to just kind of go downhill from there to where people don't ever have sex again. And I don't think that's right either. So what's the happy medium here, Daniel?
It's different for every couple, and I don't think that couples should compare themselves certainly to other couples, because what marriage is, the role of marriage or the purpose of marriage is the same, to make us human as God intended, not just Homo sapiens, but human. That is, when I say human, I mean eminently intimately relational, which is what we see in God himself. He's eminently intimately relational, where his, that Trinity aspect of God. We begin as we talked earlier, about how that initial sexual attraction has a lot. It's primarily biochemical, and its goal is procreation. We've kind of turned it into something else. We turn it into a behavior that we go to for pleasure, for amusement, relaxation, whatever, and it can actually become an addiction when we assume that rush of dopamine should be the norm, when in fact it shouldn't be the norm. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, there is a kind of a clock on us biologically in that area where when we begin to get older, the brain begins to change and priorities change. Life becomes more complicated, for one thing, when, just after marriage, but talking about, why the sex becomes less. Life can become more complicated. And so the brain, the functions of the brain, and primarily we talked about oxytocin versus dopamine, those functions change a bit. And that affects our libido. It affects, that sex drive. But I wanted to talk, too, we want to introduce this other part of along with that and the idea that where we really live isn't in the bio, the biology of all this. Where we really live is in the narrative of it. That is, what's the meaning that we give to it in our mind? What's the meaning of we give to relationship itself? Well, we enter into relationship with distances. Certainly, we've talked about this in times before, that relationships are distances. That means, when Johnny or Tarzan meets Jane, let's stick with Tarzan and Jane. Tarzan meets Jane, and this is sort of drawn together. But they have they each have a past. And so what the past is done in both of their lives is teach them that certain behaviors are safe, certain relationships are safe, certain relationships aren't. And so what we learn to do when we're growing up is keep people at specific psychological and emotional distances. Now, it could be a small distance. It could be a great distance. But it's a distance that we've learned, and we intuitively choose a person that allows us that same psychological and emotional distance. Sex kind of bridges that, because initially it's purely biochemical. But after a while, after there's more familiarity and the sex isn't as stimulating, then these distance factors kind of come into play. And then the relationship starts to get a little more complicated. And since the brain can't do two things at once, it can't fight and flee at the same time, in a sense, we wind up going one way or the other. So there's the, people who you have the choice of either And this is one example, we're talking about the sexual drive. It happens in other areas too, but in the sexual drive, people can either attempt to make sex kind of the chief cornerstone of the relationship, demanding that, we're always going to have to enjoy sex, or they can go in a different direction. If they try to make sexual enjoyment the chief cornerstone, then they've got to find a way to continually raise the stimulation. Because once that act gets familiar, the brain is not going to generate as much dopamine. So they have to make it a way to keep it more stimulating. And they do this maybe by changing a narrative or playing around with the narrative. So you have couples that, like during sex, they'll role play. Or they'll use toys or things to raise the stimulation. Well, what's actually happening in the brain is that it's becoming an addiction. But another thing that's happening in the brain is it's keeping down the role of oxytocin, which is a hormone that's associated with things like trust.
So you think oxytocin is a better kind of marriage, long-term marriage brain chemical than the dopamine?
Well, dopamine is necessary, but the sex behavior drives the dopamine level really high. And so that becomes something that if we don't, as Paul said, keep our body under, if we don't discipline our mind and we just kind of put the relationship on autopilot, of course we're going to go toward that high dopamine level. But the thing is that that has a way of working against long-term commitment. And the other thing is that, again, as I say, that dopamine level, the only way that that's going to stay high is to continue to tweak the stimulation. And this is what happens. You could ask the question, well, how many ways can Tarzan and Jane stimulate that before Tarzan says, okay, been there, done that. There's another gal that I've, and so this is another way to stimulate.
That is what happens in our modern culture. Yeah. Very much.
So at some point, we have to kind of change the way that we've looked at sex as individuals, as couples, as a community, as a race, because, in some ways you could fairly argue that the shape of the human brain, in some extent, and let's just say, keep it specific to the sexual act, the shape of the human brain related to the sexual act is a product of many, many, many hundreds, thousands of years of believing a certain way about sex, having a certain narrative about sex, to where now we assume that that's what sex is, and that's kind of the shape of the brain. Certain areas developed, more than other areas. And so it's really kind of climbing, going uphill or swimming upstream when we start to go down this road of trying to discipline our minds and say, and putting in other terms, let's close the relational distance. Let's work on things like trust, work on things like forgiveness and communion and those kinds of things. And when we start to work on those things, a lot of times our definition of sexual satisfaction is going to have to change.
Mm-hmm. But it becomes more meaningful too. I would think, it's much more meaningful to be sexually active with somebody you really know well. I mean, the Bible uses that term to know the person. Mm-hmm. That's how it describes mm-hmm. even the sex act.
The potential that can happen, that people can, enjoy a sexual relationship where they don't necessarily demand as high a level of dopamine. The potential of that, I think, is opened up if we start to concentrate more on things like trust and care and forgiveness and communion. One of the things that Jean-Paul Sartre said that is priceless, I think, he said, being is essentially care. That means that care is at the bottom. Care for, not just care for myself, but care for another person is at the bottom of this whole thing of being human. Mm. And I think that that's something that kind of goes out the door when I allow the relationship simply to be about that rush of dopamine. And so, we asked in the beginning of the show, previously, what should we expect of that? And I made the statement that every couple is different. And so the process looks a little bit different. And so for some couples, there's nothing wrong with the fact that they got to a certain place in their relationship and the sex drive just completely dropped off. And a lot of times I encounter those people Now, when I say the sex drive drops off, I don't mean that for that person it dropped off, but I got excited about half a dozen other people. I'm talking about the sex drive just dropped off. And do I need to do something about that? You know, if it's working for the relationship and things like commitment and trust and communion are extremely high and they just love being together, there's it's not written that they must also have this dopamine rush. Mm. And maybe even if they experience sexual intimacy, they may not get as much of a dopamine rush as they had before. Mm. But I think we're in a place of wondering if that's all that bad, because Hollywood would tell us that it is. Right. There's something definitely wrong. Mm-hmm. And the way we've learned to believe about sexual intimacy. But if we're trying to turn the corner here and work toward more positive relationships, you know, again, the research that, you know, people that are committed and together have a higher level of oxytocin than people who are just, you know, in relationships.
Well, I've seen this example of a fire that's burning down the house and out of control, might be with major dopamine going on and major excitement. But it's out of control. It's burning your house down. When you get married and get committed and more mature, it's a manageable fireplace in the house where it's got it's in its proper place. It's warming the house. It's in control. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what we want to shoot for.
Yeah, and rather than trying to, you know, again, it's different for every couple, and I'm not certainly not on the air here telling people, you know, we can do it without sex. But, you know, instead of trying to control it and making it something in this particular relationship that it's just doesn't seem to want to be, concentrate on the things that are more more lasting, the things that are deeper, and you know, and just kind of let sex begin to play the role that is left over instead of trying to.
Well,
make
it's obviously it's kind of the icing on the cake. If you're having a great, you know, sex begins in the kitchen. We've heard these terms. Mm-hmm. If things are going well in other areas of your life, then maybe the sex drive will kind of come back a little bit. Maybe praying more together.
Maybe redefined.
You have talked on this subject many times on some of your previous broadcasts as well. Talking with Daniel Pryor, Sound Mind. If people need help with their marital issues, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
They can contact me by email through BibleBasedCounselor.com. They can call at 425-778-6169. And also, the podcasts, as you've mentioned, are on that website.
So, Bible-Based Counselor. Yeah, and also the one where you've written quite a bit.
ChristianCounselorsForum.com. A great article there that's been there for a few months now. The Purpose of Marriage. And there's actually one there on trust, forgiveness, and communion, too, in the archives.
Yeah. Great stuff. Always great talking with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor here on Sound Mind.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.